Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín, gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always with James. From Gunnerblog. Good morning, Jeff, James.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. Very flattered by the comparison there to Jeff, the greatest footballer of all time.
Yeah, well, it was only because of the J in the name and not because of your footballing ability. Let's not get carried away.
Okay, fair play.
Look, I don't want to, don't want you to get your hopes up or anything.
No. You're right to cast aspersions.
You're in Edinburgh?
I'm not.
So you're not?
No, I'm really stupid, is one of the conclusions here.
Okay.
Last week, I said I would be in Edinburgh for the Emirates Cup. I also thought I'd be in Edinburgh for the Community Shield. I was wrong. Basically, the fact that they've moved the season has really thrown me. It feels like everything's coming very early. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. I mean, it does feel very early. Like, we've hardly had any break, and next week is the Community Shield, and the week after, the season begins. So, yeah.
And tell you what, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival have not helped me. They've foxed me because not only has the season moved earlier, Edinburgh has moved later. So my kind of internal calendar is all over the place. So I am still in London, but was not at the Emirates Cup this weekend.
Well.
Disaster.
It looks like you missed out on some good stuff. There was did you see stuff? Did you see highlights?
I've seen extended highlights of both games. So yeah, some great stuff.
Well, we'll touch on all that stuff then, I guess, because it's a positive weekend from a footballing point of view. Another trophy. The preseason treble is well and truly on. It is on.
We've got the big one coming up, though. I think. I don't know. I think we're escalating in terms of trophy size throughout preseason.
Yes, it's true, because you have the Barclays Asia Tic Tac Weetabix Trophy in Singapore, and then the Emirates Cup, and now then the Community Shield, which of course takes on momentous proportions, even though it is essentially just a glorified friendly, but one, I guess, that people will use to draw conclusions and markers about where we are in the season, because you say, well, look, I saw people actually complaining about the quality of the opposition this weekend in the Emirates Cup, which I thought was a bit strange.
Complaining about the quality?
Well, just saying that, well, look, it's only Lyon, it's only Wolfsburg. You can't really draw any conclusions from that. But look, Lyon are a fantastic side who finished second in Ligue 1 last season.
I believe, finished second in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and they've got some very good players and the greatest striker that ever lived.
He's looking well, isn't he, Nick? He's been enjoying himself.
Yeah, a bit of a pantomime reception and exit he got yesterday. Some boos and stuff when he got his first few touches, and then towards the end when he was coming off, some reasonably generous applause, you might say.
Yeah, and I think I saw some quotes from him saying that he kind of enjoyed the reception. Number three, that was a bit of a strange one.
It is a bit odd, isn't it, for a striker?
But he's always been unconventional. 52 was pretty odd.
Does that mean that he's earning £3 a week at Wolfsburg? Is that the conclusion that we can draw from this?
I think it does, and yet they're still trying to get shot of him. So, yeah, good to see him. I thought the quality of the opposition, like, certainly going into the tournament, was really impressive. You know, there was some... That Lyon team is full of players that we've either been linked with at one point or that some people would like us to sign. So I don't think we can complain too much about that. And Wolfsburg have got some great players too.
Yeah, and they did cause us some problems in the opening half an hour of that game yesterday. But let's go back then to Saturday, the game against Lyon, like you say, full of guys that we've been linked with and full of, well, not full, but there are some players on that side that people would like us to buy, Lacazette, for example. He was there. He was playing. He had some shots.
Yeah, but it wasn't really his day, was it? It was all about our play going forward, which was, I thought, scintillating at times.
Scintillating is a great word, and we blitzed them. We just sort of took them apart in a 10-minute spell towards the end of the first half, and they were sort of all over the place after that, as you would expect. 4 goals in 10 minutes, 9 minutes it might well have been. Olivier Giroud doing a great Mertesacker impression, shouldering the ball in.
Could have been more goals as well. Wasn't there one disallowed as well amidst all the? I think Iwobi put one in that was offside.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, there was. What, did you have a favourite goal?
Did I have a favourite goal? I really liked Oxlade-Chamberlain's goal because I think that's the kind of stuff that we really want to see from him this season. I thought it was just really interesting the way Ramsey played the ball into Giroud. He held it up doing the Giroud stuff and his ball into the path of Oxlade-Chamberlain, who'd made a run from deep and into the box before finishing, was perfect. He looked particularly strong this weekend, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He looks like a guy who really wants to make up for all the football that he missed last season.
Strong as an ox, you might say. I think he, I think it's a big year for him. I mean, I feel like we've said that the last couple of years, and last season he started very well, and it's easy to forget was in the first 11 for 4 months or something like that before falling away with injury. But I do think there's a massive opportunity for him, and with Alexis missing the start of the season, I think it makes him pretty much a guaranteed starter in those opening weeks, so he'll be desperate to take advantage of that.
It'd be interesting. Where do you think, is he going to start on the right-hand side and the manager will look perhaps to use Theo Walcott from the left-hand side? Is that the way you would see it going?
I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because Arsene was talking about the possibility of playing Theo on the left yesterday after the game. I think it will be those two. Which way round it goes, I don't know. Oxlade-Chamberlain, I do think, looks slightly more comfortable on the right. And I think in the long term, he's got the best chance of holding down that position. So maybe it makes sense to start him there. I really liked Aaron Ramsey's goal, I have to say. That pass from Ozil was sublime.
Yeah, it was delicious, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just waited. It wasn't even that Ramsey's run was particularly... It wasn't like a Walcott sprint. It was just kind of a steady run into that area, and the weight of the pass was just fantastic. I thought Ozil showed some great stuff over the weekend too.
Yeah, a really good finish from him as well, and we've seen a couple of those in pre-season, and I do hope that that's a sign of things to come, because I think if you play in that number 10 role behind the striker, you know, I think there is an obligation to contribute some goals. No one's asking him to become a 20-goal-a-season man, but if he could reach double figures, that would make a massive difference, you know, in terms of his general overall contribution.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. The manager was talking about how he wanted to add extra goals to the side. The way he wanted to do that, there's a couple of ways. Obviously, you could go out and buy another player who could add more goals to your team, but he was looking at Santi Cazorla, Mesut Ozil, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Theo Walcott, Aaron Ramsey, goals from midfield. And we saw that in the game against Lyon. Oxlade-Chamberlain on the score sheet, Ozil on the score sheet. Cazorla, what a fantastic little free kick that was.
Yeah, that was very smart. I really enjoyed that.
Ramsey obviously scored. Ramsey a provider as well for Iwobi, who finished very well for Arsenal's third. So you're looking at exploiting those areas, and whoever you play in those areas being able to chip in. It was also interesting to hear Arsene Wenger talk after the two games over the weekend. He said, look, we could be a bit more efficient with our finishing, you know. And we scored 7 goals in 2 games.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. No, I think it's really encouraging, and I think I've mentioned it already, but especially with Alexis missing the start of the season, there were times last year when we were so reliant on him on the attacking front, and it feels like we've got, I don't know, a lot more players coming into form at this time. There's a lot more variety to what we do going forward, so I think we should be able to cover for his absence pretty effectively, it seems.
What did you make of Theo Walcott at centre forward? He scored, obviously, against Wolfsburg, a nice finish, played in very well by the Jeff.
The Jeff himself.
Yeah, but Walcott, as a centre forward, what's your general feeling on it? Even leaving this weekend aside, is he a real option there, or is it a way of trying to get him into the team because other options on the right-hand side, like Oxlade-Chamberlain, and on the left-hand side, Alexis, might be you know, causing him to have fewer opportunities than he might.
Well, I think I can tell what you think from the phrasing of the question.
No. Well, I mean, I just think that Oxlade-Chamberlain is a guy who's going to play from the right-hand side quite a lot. And I think there is clamour for us to have a different option at centre-forward, and Walcott definitely provides that option. When you compare him to Olivier Giroud, two very different players, he's more mobile and makes more darting runs than Giroud. But Giroud, obviously, we know the qualities that he has. But, you know, he hasn't played there very often. And there were times yesterday where physically he was finding it a little bit tough. And there was one, I can't remember who played the ball over the top to him. It could have been Aaron Ramsey. And he was clean through on goal, but his touches in front of goal saw the chance go begging. So maybe that's to do with preseason and not being quite as sharp as you would like. But I remain slightly unconvinced by him as a centre-forward.
I think that's fair. I think it's not surprising either, because as you say, I think at competitive senior level, how many games has he played there? Probably you can count them on two hands. And I think that inevitably, he's still learning the ropes in that position. What I would say in Walcott's, not so much his defence, but to put forward his case as centre forward, is I really enjoyed the way he took the goal he scored against Wolfsburg.
Like, yeah.
It was a very smart finish. You know, one of those where he barely looked up, just sort of poked it past the keeper. He took it very coolly indeed. Finished very well against Everton earlier in pre-season two. I think you're right. He probably should have had another couple of goals against Wolfsburg, and he let himself down a little bit in terms of his decision making or his touch. But I do think that's also a testament to the quality of his movement, and Arsene Wenger, you know, doesn't give praise too lightly, and he speaks in very, very high terms of Walcott's movement. And I do think that he's got it's partly just his pure speed, but I do think that the way he pulls defenders out of position is very effective. I think he can be a very good option there.
So what sort of teams do you play him against in that position? Well, that's the question, because I mean, can you play him against a Terry and Cahill, for example?
I'm not sure. See, instinctively in my head, immediately I go to weaker teams.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because that's where we've seen it be more effective against the likes of West Brom and Aston Villa at the back end of last season. But I do feel that they're in sides with defensive weaknesses. You know, you think back to that Arsenal-Galatasaray game last season in which Danny Welbeck absolutely destroyed them. I think Theo Walcott probably would have got two hat-tricks that night. But what he would do against a sturdier defence, who are more physical in their approach, remains to be seen. I really don't know, and I'd be less confident about his ability to thrive in those circumstances.
Yeah, but I mean, is that in itself a bad thing then, that you have this option against so-called weaker teams that you can use in order to keep somebody like Giroud? Let's assume we go into the season with Giroud as our typical centre-forward option. There has been a sense that when he's at his best, it also seems to tally with him not being tired. Or does that make sense? You know what I mean? He had this tremendous run after he came back from injury last season and went on a great run. And then after a while, when he became a bit, the physical side of the game caught up with him a bit, his goal scoring dropped off. That was also true the season before last, if you remember, when Walcott was out injured and Giroud was essentially the only option we had at centre forward, that again, some of his effectiveness was blunted simply because he was playing all the games all the time, and I think suffered physically for that. So is that a way for the manager to get the best out of Giroud, to keep him relatively fresh by using Walcott against teams that you would be confident he could score against?
I think so, yeah. It's kind of I think it's great to have the option. It's kind of a Swiss Army knife approach to the central centre-forwards situation. I think that Giroud does seem to get a bit fatigued. I think there has been a huge onus on him. And I think the fact that we've got a player like Walcott who can rotate in is a good thing. And I also think, let's not forget Danny Welbeck. I mean, I saw Tim Stillman wrote an interesting column. I don't think it was for Arsblog, maybe for another website, about how he still... I know. the traitor. He still thinks that Danny Welbeck could be the kind of ideal composite, because that's the thing about Giroud and Walcott. They're kind of extremes on a spectrum in terms of what a centre-forward can offer. But Danny Welbeck is a player who kind of sits fairly neatly between the two.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of role he can play as well once he gets back from this injury, which does seem to have spun and spun on.
Yeah, should we be a little bit worried about that? Because it's gone from the end of last season where he might have been involved in the FA Cup final, and then no, he's not, and now he's not even taking part in training. The manager has said that he's still carrying this knock from the end of last season. So maybe a little bit of caution there.
Yeah, it's a bit retro Arsenal, isn't it? The other three weeks into 3 months. A little bit of caution there. And I think, as I said, given the depth that we have in attacking areas, I don't think they'll be rushing him back. But once he does come back, it'll be interesting to see if he can play a part as a central striker or if he'll be confined to the wings once again.
Yeah, I mean, that really is it's a consideration, isn't it, when you think about what we might do in the transfer market. And the manager's been quite... I don't know how you would describe it exactly, but the other day he was asked about, you know, transfers, and he's saying, well, look, you know, we've scored 6 goals in one game. We don't have Alexis. We don't have Danny Welbeck. And that's his usual sort of patter that, look, we've done this and we don't have this. Look at all the potential that we already have. But he made the point that, look, we're still active on the market. We're looking for the opportunity. But if you are looking at a centre forward, genuinely, it means that one of the crop that you've got is going to be completely outcast in a way. Like, if you buy a Benzema who's going to play as a centre forward, that means either Giroud is never going to play or Welbeck is hardly ever going to play. And you create a situation there where that player who's left on the sidelines is going to want to play somewhere or is going to be unhappy. So you're looking at the whole squad harmony kind of thing. It's just a simple numbers thing, isn't it? You can't have that many centre forwards.
No, and, you know, look at the ones we've got. Danny Welbeck signed for the club a year ago. Olivier Giroud agreed a new contract relatively recently. And Theo Walcott seems to be on the verge of doing so.
Mm.
So it's not easy to say who you'd get a shot of in that situation and how you would manage it. I suppose the only thing that Arsene might think is that, well, Welbeck and Walcott can play wide, but those areas are very congested at the moment, so there's absolutely no guarantee they get game time there either.
Yeah, I mean, I think he also wants to make sure that he's got space for Oxlade-Chamberlain in the squad. You've got Alexis on the left-hand side.
Jeff, let's not forget Jeff.
Yeah, hang on, let's not forget Jeff because, you know...
My name is Jeff.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think those are considerations when it comes to transfer. So could you see a situation where the manager is as ruthless as he has been with Chesney, for example, in the sense that he's gone out and bought Cech and let Chesney go on loan? Could he do that with one of the forwards? It's very difficult to see him do it with Giroud or Welbeck, particularly given Welbeck was only signed 12 months ago. You know, the only way I could really see another forward coming in is if Walcott doesn't agree a new deal.
Well, that's it. I don't think he'd be quick to jettison Welbeck. I think he's a very useful player to have in the squad, and I think Arsene appreciates what he offers in terms of versatility. Of the strikers we have, if there was a game where we were looking to go somewhere and protect a lead, I think, you know, that's kind of not a great compliment for a forward, but I do think he offers a lot in that respect. So I don't know. I think if Walcott is going to sign a new deal, it's difficult to see the space for another attacker, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, when you look at it from, not from what you might want to happen, but what's likely to happen when a football club is in that situation with the players that it has, I think it's very unlikely that another forward will come in. And I think when he talks about wanting more goals in the side, I think he wants them from the players that he's already got. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that Santi Cazorla could get close to double figures. The same with Oxlade-Chamberlain. Walcott, he should be scoring at least 10 goals. Danny Welbeck, Olivier Giroud, Alexis, Mesut Ozil, Aaron Ramsey. You know, there's potential for goals there. You're not even talking about Jack Wilshere, who's you know, been scoring a few recently. The goals that come from your defenders, your centre halves, from set pieces, etc., etc. So I think
Jeff will chip in.
My name is Jeff.
Yeah, I think he will. So yeah, it's difficult to see how that's going to go, but you just don't know. You know what will happen between now and the end of the transfer window, and who might become available.
Mm.
So, Emirates Cup then, a positive weekend overall, because it does keep this sort of momentum going. And, you know, there is a danger, of course, of getting too carried away with preseason and the results that you get. But you'd much rather be winning these games in the way that we're winning them rather than sort of trying to figure out, well, that went wrong, that we've got to fix that, we've got to look at this. You know, two clean sheets.
Yeah, look, I think, and Arsenal with a completely different back four across both days.
Yeah.
Chambers and Gabriel played at centre-half. I think that feels really positive. That feels like we've got some depth in that position. And I'm glad that it seems a decision's been made that that's where Chambers is going to be predominantly next year. And I think that's certainly for the best.
Yeah, I do too. I was a little bit surprised that he didn't experiment with a couple of different combinations, because he knows what Koscielny and Mertesacker can do. So I thought he might do Mertesacker and Gabriel, for example, and Chambers and Koscielny. But look, he obviously had his reasons for doing it the way that he did it. Maybe, you know, in the very long term, Gabriel and Chambers could be, you know, the two established first choice centre halves in a couple of years' time, because they're both around the same age. No, well, they're not. Gabriel's a bit older. He's 24, and Chambers is a lot younger, obviously. But yeah, I mean, that's perhaps the future to a certain extent.
Yeah, it certainly could be. Why not? Mm. And Petr Cech, of course, made his Emirates Stadium debut as an Arsenal player, let's say.
Yes, he's been there before.
He has been there before, but we don't really talk about that through his career.
No, I don't think it ever happened.
No.
seemed to do all right. Made a couple of good saves. Good distribution.
Can kick it further than Ospina.
Well, this is true. This is true. But again, you know, that's not the most difficult thing in the world.
No, perhaps not.
No. Ospina then definitely staying, it would seem, because Wojciech Szczęsny posted on his Instagram account a message in Italian to the Roma fans. Said, "Hi there, Roma fans. I'm on my way to Rome. I'm very happy, and we're going to do some football stuff and that." Is what
I'm
he
sure
said.
He is happy. Rome's a nice place to live, I imagine. Mm. What do you make of all that then? I have to say, that's really caught me off guard. That's not how I expected it to go.
No, me neither. But I have a question about it, so I'm gonna wait until the second half of the podcast to talk about that in more detail. But it looks like
the issue at hand.
To deal with the Szczęsny thing. It's definitely happening. But look, the Emirates Cup as well is a great chance for youngsters to stake their claim. And obviously, the one who did that was the Jeff.
The Jeffster. Yeah, I think. Great name, isn't it, Jeff? I think it's up there. It's like the Brazilian Fred or whatever, or Bob or Rudolph or whatever they're all called now. Mm. I think Jeff...
And they're running out of good names, though, the Brazilians. You know, when there's a guy called Fred, come on. It's not quite Socrates, is it?
I find the incongruity of that funny, and I feel the same about Jeff. To me, Jeff's a very banal name, and that now we've got this very exciting youngster with it.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I think we should, Adelaide.
I think we should just call him the Jeff. Just to sort of separate him from the other Jeffs, like Jeff Shreves from Sky, Jeff Capes, former strongman.
Good point.
Who else? What other Jeffs are
Jeff
there?
Jeff Buckley.
Well, he's dead.
Right. So confusion unlikely.
Yeah. I think just the Jeff.
Why not?
I think Jeff.
It's great, wasn't it?
Mm. He was very promising, and some of the stuff that he did was obviously that of a 17-year-old player, and we have to look at it from the context that, look, he's just been told, go out there, have a good time, you know, you're under no pressure, there's no expectations, but he showed some very nice touches, some very quick feet, good skills, overplayed it a little, although not as much as Chuba Akpom. I thought Chuba was trying a little too hard at times.
Yeah, he seems desperate to make an impression, doesn't he? And it's not always working to his benefit.
No, it's not. I mean, there was that moment late in the Wolfsburg game where he was sort of clean through and all he needed to do was play a pass out to the right-hand side. And I think it was Ramsey or Oxlade. Yeah, I think Ramsey would have been through on goal, but he sort of messed it up. And I think that's why, you know, he needs a loan. That's why he needs to go out and play on a regular basis. But, you know, our Capital One Cup side this season could be really, really tasty. The Jeff, Alex Iwobi, Who else would we have? Dan Crowley in there?
Isaac Hayden, I think.
Isaac Hayden. Actually, he looked pretty good as well, didn't he? He came on in midfield a couple of times. And is that an interesting thing? Is
it? I think it could be. He's played there, I think, for the senior team before, but I do think he's a good option. He's certainly a physical option.
Mm.
He's a big, strong boy, is Isaac. So, I'd like to see a bit more of him there. So maybe he'd be involved in the Capital One Cup team. If he's around Emi Martinez, who I think had a really good year last year on loan at Rotherham, but he may go out on loan again.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone we're missing.
Well, there's Zelalem, there's Bielik. You know, these kind of exciting players that people want to see. But again, we're looking at these young players, and I think because we know so much about them these days, we have really perhaps expectations that are a little bit too high for them. You know.
Well, also, the thing worth saying about the Capital One Cup team is that given the number of players in the first team squad, if they remain fit, I think a lot of those players will be requiring game time then. Mm. So it won't particularly be easy. If you take somebody like a Tchibrakpom, let's say he doesn't go out on loan, when the Capital One Cup rolls around, Osimhen's probably as likely to think he's got to give Danny Welbeck a game as a striker.
Yeah. So,
and I think that exists all over the pitch. So it will be tough for them to make the breakthrough.
Mm. Anyway, we shall see. So look, overall, a very positive weekend. And we can spend the week now doing a bit of fitness, getting ready for the Community Shield next Sunday.
And presumably we've got some sort of parade planned for this week as well, with the Emirates Cup and the Asia Trophy, I hope.
Yeah, of course.
Down to that.
Yeah.
And the Community Shield, that's... How do you feel? Do you care about that?
Not really. I'd like us to win it, obviously. And I think it's, in a way, it's kind of important that we perform well, maybe get a result against Chelsea, that, the season doesn't kick off with a performance or a result that people might feel is debilitating in any way. This whole Chelsea, Mourinho, Wenger thing, obviously, it's a record that needs to be broken, but ultimately it is just a glorified friendly, and I'd rather take points off Chelsea in the league than win the Community Shield. That makes sense.
Certainly. Me too, yeah. Now, if you offer me, you can win the Community Shield or you can win the league game a few weeks later, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. But it will be a good marker of where we are and where the squad is and where the team is. And I think what we'll see on Sunday is perhaps the first real hint of how Arsene Wenger sees his team lining up. Obviously Alexis won't be there. That's something he's going to have to cover, and that might influence his team selection in a certain way. But, for the rest, we're going to see him play primarily his first choice players. And at the moment, we don't really know where or who they are in every position.
No, and that will be fascinating to see, because there are question marks. We talked about the Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain situation on the flanks. I think in central midfield as well, there's a lot of options there. And, We'll see. It'll be fascinating to see. And who he goes with up front as well, with Giroud and Walcott.
All right. Well, we'll obviously discuss that next Monday on next week's show. But now we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with your questions in part two after this.
My name is Jeff.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the second part of the show, where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. James, I'm going to go first.
Oh, okay. Very assumptive of you.
Well, I let you go first the last couple of weeks, so I think it's only fair.
All right, justice is done.
Yes. So this is a question in kind of two parts, because it's two questions, essentially. The first part comes from James Dahl, James Dahl ESPN, at James Dahl ESPN. He says, do you think it's telling, Reece Chesney, that Wenger has spoken of Czech helping the defence to be calmer and more confident? All right. So that's the first part. And the second part comes from Michael at Euler56. And he wants to know, this is quite blunt, is the Roma loan the end of Szczesny at Arsenal?
Michael doesn't mess around, does he?
Not at all.
He calls it like it is. I think that the calmness thing is definitely a factor. I think that's something we said throughout last season, really. You know, even when I think we both expressed some doubts about David Ospina as the number one, I do think that one of his major qualities was an almost eerie sense of calm that he brought to the goalkeeping position.
Mm.
And I think that the back four seemed very settled with him there, and they, although he could have moments of being a touch erratic, it was nothing like what Szczesny offered in terms of his propensity to produce the odd drag back or nerve-stopping moment. And I think even just a sort of, I don't know, I think it's a personality thing as much as anything else. And Cech is very measured, super experienced, and I think will bring a sort of tranquility to proceedings, we hope.
Yeah.
As for Szczesny and if this is the end, I don't know. As I said earlier, I'm really surprised at the way it's gone. Everything seemed to be indicating that it would be Ospina who'd be leaving. Even he, the player himself, was quoted talking about Everton and potentially moving to Turkey. And then all of a sudden, it's Wojciech who's out the door, on loan, admittedly, but depending on who you believe, with an option to buy. So, I don't know. Was John Jensen right all along? Was that smoking incident really the end for Szczesny? And was it game over from that day on? Difficult to say, because I'd like to believe that it's kind of like a Courtois situation where, you know, he'll go on loan, have a few great years, and then come back and displace Cech. You know, he could emulate Courtois in that respect.
But Courtois was younger and hadn't played for Chelsea, really.
Exactly.
Nearly 200 games under his belt for one club before being shipped out on loan.
Well, that's it. So that is the big difference. And I feel like it might be hard to see Szczesny coming back from here. I think it could well be the end. And that's a bit of a shame, because I still think he's a goalkeeper of great potential. What do you make of the whole situation?
I think, you know, when a guy plays 180-something games for a club and then loses his place and is then loaned out, I think it's only going one way, to be perfectly honest. And I think it's a shame. I like Szczesny. I like the connection that he has with the club. You know, he's been there since 15. He does have, you know, an Arsenal heart, so to speak. You know, he's always been good for a laugh. And I think perhaps the failings that he's had over the last 12 months have been over-exaggerated. You know, he's been made out to be something that he's not. You know, his general performances and time, you know, at the club has been very positive, I think. But he did lose his way, and that's entirely down to him. You know, he's been the master of his own downfall at Arsenal with his behaviour, and by not being able to be consistent in his performances. You know, I think some of that was down to the team itself last season was a bit ramshackle, you know, in the first half of the season. And he was the one who paid the price for that. But look, you know, when you do what he did and you smoke in the showers and all that kind of stuff, you just can't be surprised that things go badly for you. Whether or not he can come back, I doubt it, to be honest. I doubt it. I'd like to think he could, and we've seen with Coquelin that it can happen, but it would be a big, big surprise to me if he ever came back to Arsenal and regained his place as the number one goalkeeper.
Well, barring an unexpectedly swift decline, I think Cech, given the money that he's on, is going to be number one for, I don't know, three years minimum, isn't it? You'd imagine. So Szczesny's got a lot of time biding to do if he wants to challenge for that number one spot in the longer term. I think that the loan move is kind of a step towards the exit door.
Yeah.
Which surprises me and disappoints me to an extent, but it's difficult to see any other outcome, I'd say now.
Yeah.
Should we have another question?
Sure.
Do you... Oh, No, let's just return to the first part of that. Do you think that the calmness or Chesney's lack of it has been a big factor in contributing to this outcome?
I don't know if it's that so much as the opportunity came along to get a goalkeeper of huge experience. Mm. You know, that there's a lot to be said for having experienced players in your squad. It's why I think, you know, while I understand people have their worries about Arteta, I still think having players like that in your squad and in your team is really, really helful. And we do seem to have an excellent balance right now between experience and up-and-coming potential, and also some established young players, you know, guys like Ramsey, Wilshire, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Danny Welbeck, Kieran Gibbs, you know, Bellerin, these kind of guys who have now sort of made the breakthrough. And the combination of experience, potential, that sort of mid-level player in terms of where they are in their careers and their ages, I think it's probably the best it's been for a long time. And I think when the manager looked at the goalkeeping situation, like you say, Ospina had this eerie calm, but it was kind of eerie, all right. Like if his head had rotated 360 degrees or something on his head at one point, you'd just be like, okay, yeah, I see how that goes. I think it had more to do with Cech's availability than Chesney's lack of calm, but obviously what Cech brings is that experience. Been there, seen that, done it all, you know, and can sort of add that to the back four, which seems to have it already. So that's I think that was it more than anything else.
Okay, well, you mentioned Arteta there, so I'm going to try and sort of segue into this question, which is a transfer question, because who doesn't love transfers? And it's John, at John P. Penny, and he asks, do you think that backup for Coquelin should now be a higher priority than a centre-forward?
Well, we touched on the centre-forward thing in the first part of the show and why we think that probably won't happen. And I think that the manager is looking at Mikel Arteta as the backup for Coquelin. Maybe if a better option comes along, then he'll do that. But yeah, I think he's going to go with Arteta. And I do think perhaps some of the criticism that Arteta gets is over the top. I think it's I think he's still a very good player. If you're looking for him to be a dynamo charging around the pitch, then that's not going to happen. But I still think he can contribute. Categorizing him as some kind of has-been is way too soon. I don't think the club would have offered him a new deal if they had those kind of concerns over his fitness and ability to contribute over the course of the season.
Do you think the fact that he missed so much of last season has led a little bit to people maybe forgetting some of the positive things that he offers?
Absolutely, yeah. The fact that he missed so much of the season will lead people to say, well, look, he can't stay fit and he's not a reliable option. But, you know, for the most part, in the years that he's been at the club, when did he join? 2011?
Yeah.
He's had the odd little injury spell here and there, but, you know, he's played 40-odd games, 50 games a season for us. You know, so he has been consistently fit. And last season was the exception rather than the rule. Now, I mean, I'd share some concerns about that because he is 33 and he's not getting any younger. But I don't think 33 for a player who's in that position, who can read the game very well, who can still make good tackles, who can distribute the ball very well. I think we saw that yesterday, that it was his pass to the Jeff that saw the Jeff play the ball to Walcott for the goal, you know. So I think he's a better player than people give him credit for, and I think there's a tendency to conflate the idea that, okay, we want this new defensive midfielder, therefore we've got to write off for Arteta as well, you know. Does that make sense?
Certainly. It does make lots of sense. And do you think the potential sale of Mathieu Flamini, which looks like could be on the cards, will have any impact on Arsene's thinking about bringing people in? Or do you think that he just considers Flamini expendable and that he doesn't necessarily require replacing?
I don't know. I mean, it would really depend on what sort of role he envisages perhaps for some of the younger players in the squad. You mentioned Isaac Hayden. Perhaps he could be earmarked for that position as like third choice for a defensive midfielder. I don't quite know. I mean, we'll have to see what's happening with Flamini. He wasn't involved in the Emirates Cup. The manager said it was because of injury, but from what we can gather, he's going to be on his way. So, you know, there's got to be some kind of contingency plan for that, because Flamini was a squad member last season, spent a lot of time on the bench, obviously, but he was there as an option. So if the manager is going to sell him, he must have an idea of how he's going to replace him in the squad or who could do that job, you know?
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it's, you know, we talked about Callum Chambers settling at centre-half, but Flamini provides cover at holding midfield and fullback, and potentially he could do that too. I don't know, it'll be interesting to see.
What's your thought on Arteta?
I think that he offers an awful lot to the squad in terms of his experience. I think he's a great distributor of the ball. I think there are games where he will be an ideal choice, perhaps not even to start, but to come on and help control proceedings, maybe when you're in the lead. My only concern is that Coquelin's brought so much in terms of his tenacity and the physicality he brings to the midfield, and I'm not sure Arteta has ever or would ever be able to match that. So I'm not sure it's a like-for-like replacement. I suppose it's a bit like if you lost Giroud for an extended period of time and you had to rely on Theo Walcott, there would be certain deficiencies in Walcott's game where you would notice that absence, you know. But what can you do? You can't go and buy a clone of Coquelin. That's not really necessarily possible or healthy. So
yeah,
I think it's a difficult situation to match. What I do think is that it's important to have players of that experience in the squad. I feel like it's very easy to say, let's get rid of Flamini, let's get rid of Arteta. But if we got to a sticky point in the situation, a sticky point in the season where we showed a little bit of inexperience or we were nervy, I'm sure people would be calling for some of these older heads to be around. They'd be talking about how we shouldn't, you know, get rid of players too early and Arsene's a fool for his contract policy. I do think that he's learned from some of the mistakes of that post-Emirates Stadium move era, and I think he sees the value in keeping guys like Arteta, keeping guys like Rosicki, who, you know, was really on the fringe of the squad last season, but I think he still considers him an important figure in the dressing room. And for me, that's as much as anything the kind of primary value of someone like Arteta.
I had completely forgotten about Thomas Rosicki.
Yeah,
is that
exactly.
Bad?
It is bad, because obviously we love him and he's a great player, but I think that says something about how limited a role he could end up playing this year.
Okay. All right, another question?
Another question.
Okay, it's my turn.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Sorry.
It is, yeah.
My name is Jeff.
Okay, here we go. This is a question from... Ah, shit. Okay, this one comes from Sir Robbie McLeod. At Sir Lamb Shed, I don't know. But basically, he wants to know, what prospect do you wish lived up to his potential but ultimately never did?
Oh, this is a Jeff-related question.
I don't know if it's Jeff-related at all.
we saw Nicholas Bentner this weekend as well, let's not forget, so he can factor into that. Do I wish lived up to his potential?
Like, who was your favourite young player that sort of come through, got the hype, and everyone went, this guy is the next whatever, and but never was the next whatever?
Well, I tell you what, it's probably a guy who actually barely figured at senior level, but every time I watched him for the youths or the reserves, he absolutely blew me away, and that was J. Emmanuel Thomas.
Yeah.
Who was just way too good for that level. And unfortunately, I think he knew it. And I don't think his attitude ever quite matched up to his ability. But watching him play at, you know, under 18 level or what have you, was a genuine joy, because it's partly because physically he was so much more developed than the people around him. But he had obviously audacious technical ability too. And he could play any position, played centre-half, played left-back, holding midfield, he played as a centre-forward. And I was convinced that if this guy could knuckle down, that he's a top-class player. And I actually think he will end up in the Premier League. I think he's got that level of ability that if he gets his head right, I think he joined QPR this summer, so he's at Championship level.
Oh, has he, yeah?
Yeah, he's moved from Bristol City. Well, he wasn't even a regular. I mean, he played a lot for them last season, but he was in and out of the team in League One, and he's gone, I think, on a free to QPR as kind of an Adel Taarabt replacement, you know, kind of a lazy playmaker with more ability than willingness to work. But I do think that if he can put it together, he could still be a Premier League player. So he's someone who I really, really loved and was disappointed, I think, actually, that he didn't seem to have all the attributes you need to make the grade. And I think that mental aspect is as big as any talent side, really. Mm,
fair
enough. What about yourself?
Well, leaving the obvious Senderos aside.
Of course.
For me, it was Henry Lansbury.
Ah.
I don't know why. I just liked the look of him.
Mm.
I just thought he looked like a good player. I liked the fact that he had an I instead of a Y at the end of his name. So you were tempted to call him Henri in the French style. And I don't know. That was it. I don't know. There's no good
reason
for it.
Scored against Tottenham.
He did score against Tottenham at White Hart Lane, no less, right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
I like that. But aside from that, I don't quite know why him more than any other.
He was very well thought of by Arsene Wenger, definitely. He was always talking him up. Another one, I suppose, was in the early days, I was a big fan of Carlos Vela because I loved those chips. I could have done with seeing more of those chips.
They were good. I mean, in fairness, he's gone on and he's had a good career elsewhere.
Yeah, great career in La Liga.
Playing for Real Sociedad, which is where Joel Campbell might end up, by the way. Mm. Let me think of another one then.
Well, we talked about Lupoli a few weeks ago. Bentner, obviously, is another one. I don't know. Yeah, the Swiss centre-half, Senderos and Giroud, it was kind of a shame that their careers didn't necessarily pan out as...
Yeah, you remember Arsene Wenger used to refer to Giroud as he who must not be named because he didn't want anybody sort of coming in and stealing him away. Fran Morita, what about that? Remember that goal he scored against Liverpool?
Yeah, Fran Morita. And yeah. I think he ended up playing in the Brazilian league.
Yes, he went far away. I don't know where he is now. He's playing for a team called SD Huesca.
Where are they?
In the Spanish second division.
Mm.
I don't even know what part of Spain they're from. Aragon.
Yeah, he's back in Europe at least, so he's gradually making his way back to London for his glorious return to Arsenal.
Yeah, he's going to out-Coquelin with his amazing return.
And look, we're still yet to see what happens to Wellington Silva. That's the big one. That's the one everyone's wondering about.
Well, I don't think Wellington's going to make it. You know why?
Why?
My name is Jeff.
I think that's why.
To be fair, Wellington is nearly as good a name as Jeff, but not quite.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, go on.
Shall I ask you a question?
Why not?
Okay. Okay. This is an interesting one, actually, about the midfield from Josh Benson. He's at Josh Benson 1310. And he asks, do you think Arsene will use Ramsey as a central midfielder alongside Cazorla as the deepest pair at times this season?
Say that again?
Sorry, I actually, it was my intonation. The question
no,
is...
No, I just wasn't listening.
Do you think the manager will use Ramsey and Cazorla as the deepest pair at times this season?
So you mean like as a sort of a double pivot?
Yeah, he means no Coquelin. Cock-free.
Cock-free Arsenal. That is a really good question. I'm struggling to see exactly how our midfield is going to line up this season because there's so much talent in there and so many good players. You know, you're looking at Coquelin, Cazorla, Ramsey, Wilshere, Ozil. I don't quite know how he's going to line up this midfield, which is why I think that. The Community Shield on Sunday is going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
You know? So we might get an idea of the manager's intentions there, you know, by his team selection. I'm not sure that he can continue, for example, playing Ramsey on the right-hand side. You know, I just don't see that that's a long-term option, to be perfectly honest. It was interesting, perhaps, on Saturday, when you look at the team that he selected, that he had Ramsey and Coquelin together in the central midfield role. So maybe that was a way of taking a look at those two together. But how do you leave Cazorla out? How do you leave a player like that out of your team?
Well, this is it. And I think against Everton and Wolfsburg, I think Cazorla has played without Coquelin, actually. So I think that, I don't know, is there some sort of indication there potentially that that could be a way he goes, that he does dispense? I can't see him dispensing with Coquelin. I think he was so integral to our form in the second half of last season. I just can't imagine starting the next campaign without him as a pivotal figure in the side. So it is kind of the Ramsey problem, isn't it? It's really, he's so effective and such an important player. You really do need to get him into the team. But how and where you do that is not simple.
No, it's not. It's not. And I think that's going to be his biggest challenge, is to find the right midfield. Maybe he might be looking at it in a way that, as we discussed earlier, with Walcott perhaps being a centre-forward option against so-called weaker sides, that he might tend to shift his midfield around a bit depending on who we're playing. So away from home against Chelsea, for example, you're definitely going to play Coquelin as part of a deeper-lying midfield. But perhaps when you're playing at home against Bournemouth, for example, that you've got more scope to perhaps play Ramsey and Cazorla or Ramsey and Wilshere in that way. So it might be a case that he does that, but then you've got to try and maintain the consistency of the shape and the way that the team plays. So I don't know. I really think that's going to be his biggest challenge this season. Like, whatever about switching your centre forward for a game, you know, the engine room of your team and how it lines up, maybe you don't want to tinker with that too much. So I really don't know.
What would you guess? If you had to make a guess of what we'll see against Chelsea and what we'll see in the first few weeks of the season in the midfield, what would your hunch be?
What would my hunch be? I think he is going to play Coquelin to provide that defensive shield. And it's either, you know, if he's going to play Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right-hand side, God, I don't know. I really don't know.
Do you end up pushing Ramsey?
Yeah, I mean, I could see him play Ramsey wide in the Community Shield.
While Alexis is away, certainly.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain could play on the left against Chelsea. I just don't know. I mean, I think it'll probably emerge over the first few games what his choices, and whether or not that works remains to be seen, and you may have to tinker with that. So it's a really difficult one.
It is a difficult one, but let's not forget this is Arsenal, so it's a matter of time until that choice is taken out of his hands.
Yeah,
touch wood. But yeah, so it will be really fascinating to see how that one plays out.
Okay, final question for you. This comes from Haroon Hickman at Haroon Hickman, and he wants to know,
my name is Jeff,
or Lionel Messi for the Ballon d'Or?
This year?
Yeah.
It'll be a close run thing. I'd say maybe this year Messi, but all other years from now until the end of time, Jeff.
The Jeff.
Yeah, J-Dog.
The J-Dog. All right, well, look, we'll leave it there for this week. We will be back next Monday. Indeed. Know where you're going to be next Monday? Do you know which part of the world you're going to be in? Has the calendar, you know?
Next Monday is actually the day I'll be travelling to Edinburgh. So we may be recording next Monday, or we may have to fudge it and do it another day. I don't know.
Well, that's not very easy for me to work my week around. I don't like these last-minute changes and stuff.
What time
are you travelling to Edinburgh?
I'm not even sure.
Oh, my God, you're so ill-prepared.
We shouldn't do the admin on the podcast. I always, you know, I need to prepare this stuff. I need to look at spreadsheets and emails and
train timetables.
I need to know what I'm doing with my life, and clearly I don't.
Do you know even how you're getting to Edinburgh? Are you train?
Hitchhiking.
Plane?
Hitchhiking.
Hitchhiking.
Hitchhiking and canoe.
I'd like to see you on one of those, you know, in the old-fashioned cartoons where they get on the train tracks and it's just like a platform and the two guys are going, pushing the thing up and down. I'd like to see you travel to Edinburgh on one of those.
Yeah, with a knapsack, with just a, you know, a stick with a hanky attached to it, with my three possessions in it. Do you know, I got turned away from a bar last night for wearing the tracksuit, the infamous tracksuit.
What?
I was wearing...
Why were you...
Do you remember me being spotted at the Emirates Stadium wearing a tracksuit?
I do. It's forever implanted on my mind, that right. vision of homelessness.
Yes, well, I was wearing it again yesterday.
Why?
Let's not go into the whys and wherefores and...
Don't you have pants?
I've got pants, yeah, but
well,
sometimes...
Why don't you wear them?
Sometimes I just want to be comfy. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, I can't be bothered to wear real trousers.
Well, I understand that if you're around the house, but, you know, when you go out in public, you've got an image to uphold here.
You would think, but, I mean, apparently I have no self-respect. But anyway, this bar that I was trying to get into to see some friends, they were not having it. I had to spend about 20 minutes convincing them that this was a sartorial choice and not an emblem of my homelessness.
Well, look, I wouldn't blame the bar for not letting you in. I don't think I'd let you in either.
To your house?
Well, definitely not.
You don't let me in your house. That's why we have to record this over the internet. Anyway, this has taken a turn. But look, we will be doing a podcast next week and it probably will be out on Monday. But what time? We do not know.
Did you get in the end?
I got in the end. Don't worry.
Did you drink some beers?
Have you heard of Gunnar Blog? Or
you might know me for my after the whistle.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, does this help? It was a good game today, and there were some goals. And they were like, oh, that's the guy.
That's
we know him.
Come on in. Drinks are on the house.
Exactly.
Free baby shams all round.
Exactly.
All right. Well, look, there'll probably be a podcast next week, hopefully.
Of course there will.
There will.
Of course
there will. We'll figure it out offline. All right, then. Until then, take it easy, and we'll chat to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Jeff. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.